The harbor master's office was a converted customs shed at the edge of the Eastern Quay, a low building of whitewashed brick that smelled of tar and old rain. Concetta approached it at 9:30, when the morning light had already turned the bay into a sheet of hammered silver, and the first fishing boats were pulling in their nets with the slow, grinding effort of men who had learned to trust nothing but their own arms. She wore the black dress, stiff with morning crepe, and she carried nothing but the question burning in her ribs like a swallowed coal. She had told Enzo she was going to La Posta early to sort the afternoon backlog, a half-truth which meant it was almost a lie. Enzo was already at the dock, checking the rigging on La Barca, his broad back turned to the house, his hands busy with ropes he had tied 1,000 times before. He had not asked where she was going. He rarely asked. That was one of the things she loved about him and one of the things she feared. The door to the customs shed was unlocked. Concetta pushed it open and the smell hit her tar, yes, but underneath it something sour, like wet wool left in a damp cellar. The office was small. A desk dominated the center, its surface covered in ledgers bound in cracked leather, stacks of forms, and a brass inkwell that had dried to a brown crust. Behind the desk sat a man she had seen 100 times without ever speaking to him. He was older than Enzo, perhaps 60, with a face carved by wind and salt, his skin the color of cured tobacco. His hands were thick-fingered, the nails broken and stained with grease. He looked up from a ledger and his eyes narrowed. "You're not supposed to be in here," he said. His voice was gravel, worn smooth by years of shouting over engines and gulls. "I'm sorry," Concetta said. She kept her gaze on the edge of his desk, on a stack of manifest folders labeled with dates from last winter. "I was looking for the harbor master." "That's me," he set down his pen. It was a fountain pen, cheap, the nib bent. "What do you want?" She hesitated. The question was simple, but the answer required a lie wrapped in another lie. "I need to check a ship manifest, from 1943. The man's expression did not change. He leaned back in his chair, the wood groaning beneath him, and studied her with the careful attention of a man who had learned that curiosity in this village usually preceded trouble. "Which ship?" "There were many transports out in October," the harbor master said finally. "We don't keep manifests for every ship that leaves this harbor." He gestured toward the filing cabinet, its doors slightly ajar, one drawer hanging crooked on its tracks. "Some of those records were lost, some were destroyed." He didn't elaborate. He simply closed the drawer with his knee and picked up his pen again. He was silent for a long time. Outside, a gull cried sharp, impatient. The bay glittered. Somewhere, a diesel engine coughed and settled into a rhythm. Concetta kept her hands folded in her lap so he would not see them shake. The harbor master finally spoke. "October saw too many vessels to keep count," he said, looking away. "We don't log every ship that departs this port. The files vanished. Others were burned. War turns bureaucracy to ash." "I understand," Concetta said. She did not understand. She understood that he was lying, and she understood that he was protecting someone, but she said nothing more. She let the silence stretch, let him decide whether she was a nuisance or a threat. "What ship are you looking for?" he asked again, softer now, almost curious. She could have given him a name. She could have said Andrea Marino and watched his face crumple with the weight of a death certificate filed in Bologna. But she had learned, in the weeks since the first letter arrived, that names were dangerous things. Names opened doors you could not close. "A cargo vessel," she said. "It docked in Marseille. I think it came from here." The harbor master's eyes flicked to hers for the first time. They were pale gray, almost colorless, like the sky before a storm. "Why Marseille?" "It's where the cargo was destined." She had rehearsed this in the dark, before sleep, while Enzo breathed beside her in the space they had stopped sharing 4 nights ago. "I'm trying to trace a shipment, for the post office. We received a complaint about a missing letter. It may have been on one of those ships." It was a good lie, it was plausible. It invoked the bureaucracy of La Posta, the one institution the harbor master respected because it answered to Rome. He considered it, his jaw working slowly, the tendons standing out along the side of his neck. "Show me the complaint," he said. He tapped the folder with one thick finger. His hand moved to the edge of the page and held it there, pressing flat as though anchoring it against a breeze. "Two military transports," he said. His voice dropped, lower than before. "Same tide as the freighter." He looked at her, then away, toward the window where the gray light fell across the desk. Names are in a different file, one I don't keep here. The harbor master laughed. It was a short, dry sound, like stones tumbling in a bucket. Cross-reference, you sound like a bureaucrat. He stood up. He was shorter than he had seemed sitting down, but broader, his shoulders blocking the light from the single window. He walked around the desk and opened a metal filing cabinet. The drawers slid open with a shriek of rust. He pulled out a folder, thumbed through pages thick with faded handwriting, and set it on the desk. October 43, 3 ships. 2 military transports, 1 cargo freighter. The freighter was the one Andrea sailed on, left the evening of the 7th, loaded with crates marked medical supplies. No passenger manifest. We didn't keep passenger manifests for cargo ships. That wasn't the procedure. Medical supplies, Kinsetta said. Her voice was steady. She was surprised by it. And the military transports. Full of men going to the front, full of men who came back in boxes. You want the names? I have them. I have them all. He tapped the folder with one thick finger. But you won't find what you're looking for in October, not on a ship. Why not? He looked at her again, and this time his eyes were not gray but something darker, something that had seen too much and chosen not to speak about it. Because the war doesn't care about your questions, Signora. Ships leave. Ships sink. Men go. Men come back wrong. What matters is what you do with the silence after. Check with the mayor's office, he said, already looking back down at his ledger. They'll give you the same answer, or the priest. Kinsetta felt the words land inside her, heavy and wet, like stones dropped into a well. She wanted to ask him about Andrea. She wanted to say the name and watch his face and read whatever truth lived there. But she said nothing. She folded her hands tighter and nodded, once, sharply, as though she had received useful information and was leaving. Thank you, she said. Don't thank me, he said, and don't come back, not about this. She turned toward the door. Her dress rustled against her legs, the crepe stiff and unforgiving. She had not expected him to be friendly. She had not expected him to be this honest. The honesty was worse. Honesty implied that he knew what she was searching for and was choosing, deliberately, to withhold it. That meant the cover-up was not just bureaucratic negligence. It was personal. It was deliberate. It reached into this small, tar-smelling office and touched the man sitting behind the desk. And it reached further, back to October 1943. Back to a cargo freighter called Il Gabbiano and crates marked medical supplies, and a man who was supposed to be dead in a hospital in Bologna. She stepped outside. The light was blinding. The bay stretched before her, vast and indifferent, its surface broken by the white caps of a wind she could not feel from this distance. She stood on the quay for a moment, her feet planted on the worn stone, and let the question settle in her chest. It was no longer a question. It was a certainty. Andrea had not died in Bologna. He had been on a ship. He had left. And someone had made sure the records showed otherwise. She walked back toward the village. The path from the quay to the center was steep and narrow, lined with walls of dry-stacked stone that held back the earth and the memory of centuries. She climbed it slowly, her breath even, her face composed. She thought about the harbor master's eyes. She thought about the folder with its three ships. She thought about the word freighter and the word medical and the way they sat together, clean and official, like a lie dressed in the right clothes. She climbed the final rise and stopped by the fountain, where the women still beat linen against stone, their murmurs blending with the slap of water. Heads stayed down. Faces remained turned away, indifferent to her presence. Let them remain blind. She marched past the houses with their shuttered windows and empty yards, past the church where Padre Salvatore was likely rehearsing his sermon on duty and the dignity of those who accept their lot without question. She thought of Andrea. She thought of Marseille. She thought of the date, which was impossible, which was impossible, which was impossible. She reached Casa Marino, the iron key biting into her palm, and slipped inside before the dawn could fully break.